This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by AppPro International Incorporated, a leading developer of innovative supercomputing solutions uniquely positioned to support high-performance computing markets. www.appro.com.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Feds suck the energy out of SC12.
And Intel has open mic day at Hot Chips.
Good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for August 31st, 2012. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael. Well, we're starting to already talk about what we're going to do at SC12, but there's been news leaking out, and you put a story together on what's not going to be happening at SC12.
Yeah, I mean, we've both heard about these rumors for a while about what's happened as a result of a GSA scandal that actually happened a couple of years ago, where they had some sort of lavish spending at an event that they put on in Las Vegas in 2010.
Don't worry about that. What happens in Vegas always stays in Vegas.
Yeah, except not this time around. Somebody found out about it, and somebody
did. Problem was the money stayed in Vegas.
Yeah, the money stayed. They spent nearly $1 million on this training conference, and with a lot of perks and just spending on resort type accommodations and Beef Wellington and taking non-government employees out to lunches and dinners. And somebody found out and they did a report on it, the inspector general, and it was a scathing report, and they hauled these guys before Congress. But the outcome of this is that the feds decided to take a new look at how conferences were being managed and how the travel spending was being managed specifically. And the Office of Management and Budget issued some guidelines, some new guidelines on how it would be done. Basically, they said everybody's got to cut back 30%. All the agencies could have to cut back 30% on what they were doing in 2010, and that's going to go on for a while. And so some of the agencies have already come up and had some edicts about it. And basically, the DOE came forward and said, okay, we're going to limit our conference travel budget to $100,000 per conference.
Which, when you get to supercomputing, starts being a pretty significant limit.
Right. I mean, you can go above that limit, but you need to all of a sudden go to the Secretary of the Energy and get a waiver of some sort. So
and there's a lot of scrutiny on this now. So basically, right, as you said, you're going back to 2 years ago. They're whooping it up in Las Vegas. They have a big extravagant training event, and now 2 years later, we're seeing the payoff from that because there was a scandal, and now everyone's got to cut back. So we're going to get DOE labs who are pulling out of their not pulling out entirely, but canceling their booth space at supercomputing, probably limiting attendees at supercomputing, and that's the shakeout from that scandal.
Right. So far, we've seen what's been confirmed is Brookhaven, Los Alamos, NNSA, and Sandia have canceled their booths, not their participation. They're still going to send some people, not sure how many, not sure as many as they were, but they're going to participate. But those exhibits apparently have been canceled. None of the other DOE labs at this point have officially canceled, but if you start to look at the numbers, if you can spend $100,000, the DOE can spend $100,000 on this conference, and you realize each of those booths runs between $100,000 and $400,000, say.
Mm-hmm.
How many booths can you get? Well, one. And then you can't send very many people. So
that's
they
right. $100,000 limit would get eaten up pretty quickly. I'm thinking about that number in the context of how much Intersect 360 Research spends on supercomputing. And we don't have a booth, and we're only a couple of people, right?
Right.
$100,000 just isn't going to go that far. So we're looking at cancellation of booth space, a lot fewer attendees, and that's got a lot of potential ramifications. Now, you point out in your article, Michael, that from an overall attendance perspective, the overall impact is probably not that great. That government attendance was, what, only about 10% of attendees last year? So yeah, if it cuts back a little bit, it's not going to be a huge dent.
Right, less than 10%. It's not like, and you know, probably worst case, that'll be cut in half or something around there. So maybe 5% less. But those are, I don't want to say those are more important people than anybody else there, but those are people involved in some of the largest supercomputers in the world. So they get a lot of attention. They're procuring these systems. They're running them. They're sort of key people in the supercomputing community, especially at the high end. So it's not just 500 random, you know, sales guys that just didn't show up. It's 500 people that sort of run supercomputing in the U.S. in a sense.
Well, the 500 random sales guys who show up are showing up to talk to these people.
Exactly, exactly.
these are your big buyers.
Yeah, the big buyers and their partners too. I mean, some of them are partners to, you know, the commercial interests out there. So this is going to have some, I think, pretty serious impact, especially to see how, you know, we'll have to see how deep this goes and what actually happens on the booth exhibits and the attendance front. But it's shaping up to be sort of a certainly a downer for SC, and you know, has some major effects on the HPC vendors that, you know, sort of rely on these big labs to sort of bolster their image and to talk with them and to sell things, like you said.
One potential upside for some of these vendors is it looks like there might be some prime real estate on the show floor that's now opened up if anyone wants to try to upgrade their booth space.
Right, right. I mean, some of these booths are very large. I think I mentioned, you know, Oak Ridge booth and the Berkeley booth, and neither of those have canceled officially yet. But those are very big booths, and some of the others, they'll open up some major floor space on that show floor.
Yeah, we've been to supercomputings in the past where, you know, those DOE labs are really front and center. Now, we haven't heard about any effect on any of the other funding sources yet. You know, what does this mean for DOD sites? What does it mean for Blue Waters, which is NSF funded?
Right.
You know, we haven't seen any fallout to that yet, but other DOD events that are HPC related have been affected in the wake of the GSA scandal earlier this year. They've had DOD conferences or meetings that have been canceled or significantly cut back. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if some of the DOD sites started following suit.
Right. And now I counted a couple booths the DOD has, and maybe there's one more, but they have a much smaller presence than the DOE at this particular show. But yeah, my general impression is they're probably going to cut back as well. They've never been very extravagant with the booth, certainly, and probably their attendance is somewhat lower just because there's a smaller population that's going to the show. But they'll be cutting back. And the NSF, that's sort of a question in my mind. From what I could glean from talking with some of the centers, they're good to go. I mean, maybe they might be getting some of their support from the universities they're affiliated with rather than directly from the NSF. The NSF wouldn't comment on the policy that they're going to institute to support this OMB directive as of today. So that's a little up in the air. But it sounds like, you know, the supercomputing centers that are NSF sponsored are okay right now. But that could change. I mean, this is all sort of in motion, and any federal agency, I think, should be kind of looking over their shoulder right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we do know is that there's going to be a lot of attention paid to this. You know, it's not like everyone's going to just forget about it in the near term.
No.
Hopefully in the long run, this won't affect negatively, you know, on the conference or its organizers, you know, when this is something that's really out of its control.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I sort of thought of is the top supercomputer for the top 500 is likely to be a DOE computer. It'll either be Sequoia again or maybe Titan, both of which are DOE supercomputers, and there won't be a booth there to exhibit that technology. I mean, there'll be people there certainly to, you know, accept the award and talk about it, but it's going to be a little odd to see that, especially
unless IBM or Cray takes up some of that booth space and dedicates it to be an exhibition of that technology. I suppose the door is open for the vendors to go ahead and spend more to help bail out the government sites.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure whatever attention these elite computers will get there. There'll be some, but it'll be a little odd, especially if you see, you know, the European and the Japanese supercomputer sites show up with a big presence, and there we are with our sort of top centers or some of our top centers that are not very not very visible. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting thing to see how this develops, but a little bit of a damper.
You know, another system that'll probably get a lot of attention is the Stampede system, which will be going into TAC in that time frame, which, of course, is a university one. So that one should not be dampened at all, and that'll be related to our second story, which we'll get to coming back after a break.
APRO is a leading developer of innovative supercomputing solutions uniquely positioned to support high-performance computing markets, focusing on medium to large-scale deployments where lower total cost of ownership is essential. APRO accelerates technical applications and business results through outstanding price per performance, fast time to market solutions based on the latest open standards technologies, innovative cluster tools, and management software packaged with HPC professional services and support. APRO supercomputing solutions enable scientists and engineers in academia, government, and industry to use highly technical, compute-intensive applications for scientific research discovery, data modeling, engineering simulations, and seismic visualization. APRO's headquarters is located in Milpitas, California, with offices in Korea and Houston, Texas.
So yeah, we're back, and yeah, you mentioned the Stampede supercomputer that's going to go into TAC, and that of course is the first or one of the first supercomputers that will incorporate Intel's Knights Corner chip, the new many-core chip that they've been developing, it seems like for the past 5 years. That 10 petaflop system, and this week at Hot Chips,
we're getting closer and closer to it, though.
We are. I mean, it's, and I'm guessing at supercomputing that we'll see a lot more of this technology and this chip, especially. But Intel did release a little more information about the design and the architecture of this chip this week at Hot Chips, which we sort of alluded to in our intro there.
So it's the Hot Chips conference, and they give all kinds of low-level technical details, which they're releasing because they figure only the people who are at Hot Chips could possibly understand them.
Right. Yeah. So they didn't give us product information. That wasn't this about. They didn't say there's going to be X number of cores, or it's going to be at this gigahertz, or here's the memory bandwidth. This was an architectural presentation. Basically, they talked about the core architecture and some of the things they're doing with the vector unit. They spilled a little bit more about how that vector unit would look. They're going to add some special sort of accelerators to it to help with transcendental functions. They're going to add a scatter-gather memory implementation to help with the memory bandwidth as part of that as well.
I think that might be the most interesting part that they revealed. That scatter-gather is very important to certain types of applications, some of which are the holdovers that have been on vectors for a long time.
Right. The scatter-gather is basically a vector-type feature that we've seen on vector computers back since they've been invented. It's a way to optimize sort of the memory access, especially on access that's irregular, like on sparse matrices and that sort of thing. So it's very much vector-oriented, and this is basically a vector coprocessor. So it made sense to do that sort of thing. The big picture, though, is basically they're saying this is a cache-coherent coprocessor. I mean, we've already known that. They went into some of the details on how the cache system is set up, but it is cache-coherent, and the presentation sort of used that as a way to contrast that with the other popular accelerator of the day, which is GPUs, which doesn't use cache coherence. It relies on memory streaming, basically, to get this parallel data and crunch on it. So it's a different approach. Intel obviously thinks their approach is better, and they've backed it up with some figures. And you know, cache, generally it's better to have data in cache. It's just more expensive to go out to memory. But this is an architecture that has a very lesser number of cores than a GPU, so it's sort of apples and oranges here. They're different approaches to the same problem, and we're going to see pretty soon on which one is going to be applicable to which kinds of applications best, I think.
Well, I mean, yeah, this is the trend we've been talking about going back to a year ago, and a big one at supercomputing is what's the going to be the dominant processor architecture going forward. And the, you know, the opposing sides have their soldiers on the battleground now. We're seeing all the maneuvers as Intel and NVIDIA and AMD all line up their positions here. I think, you know, this is just preliminary right now. This is some of the technical details with the cores. I bet we'll get more details on things like how to program these systems at IDF, which is coming up also in San Francisco in a couple of weeks. Typically, you get a lot of good information for developers at IDF. Well, it's got developers right in the name. That's what the D in IDF is for. But, you know, that I bet we'll get a lot of good information on the software implementation for the MIC architecture in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I hope that's the case. Yeah, it definitely is the focus of that that forum there. I think the actual spec for the first set of chips, the first Xeon Phi chips, which will be Knight's Corner, will come out, I think, during SC12 in November. I mean, they'll have some version of Stampede up and running and hopefully benchmarked and maybe some other systems as well. And they're supposed to release the chip before the end of this year, so supercomputing is the obvious place to do it. And I'm sure Intel would love to sort of steal the show with that news. So I think for the full story, you know, stay tuned. It's a couple months, a few months away.
Well, speaking of Intel, there's one other quick item of note, which is that we learned that John Gustafson has left Intel to head over to AMD.
Right. He was the director of Intel Labs there for 3 years in Santa Clara. And yeah, this week he announced that he was going to join AMD, their erstwhile competitor, as a senior fellow and the chief product architect for the graphics unit.
Yeah, the graphics stuff, not directly competing on the compute side. He's going to be on the heritage of the legacy ATI products, those Radeons and follow-ons, right?
Yeah, but it'll also be presumably whatever GPU computing products they come up with as well. He'll be in charge of the whole unit there. I mean, it used to be called ATI. Now it's just their graphics business, but yeah, I'm assuming it's the GPUs, the APUs, the whole thing. He's the he'll be basically the CTO of that business unit, and he'll be taking over that. And I'm not sure who was there before, if they had a CTO. I have a feeling this is a new position they maybe made for him.
It might be, and you know, if they can have some clarity around what's going to happen with these APUs and the future of Fusion, that would be something that would be greatly appreciated on our side. I think that's been a largely muddled message ever since AMD acquired ATI.
Yeah, it has. Now, this week we noticed AMD did launch the FirePro GPUs that they've been talking about, and then these things...
The follow-on to the Fire Stream, which we really didn't hear that much about.
Right.
We've heard a lot more about Fusion than Fire Stream recently.
Definitely, yeah. But these are the top-of-the-line, just pure discrete GPUs, and they just launched those this week, and I think that'll be the basis for their GPU computing for servers going forward. And I think, you know, maybe we'll get a chance to talk with John and see what the vision is there.
One other noteworthy move not to be ignored is that Pascal Barbalossi has left Bull, where he was heading up that HPC team, and he's now at DDN. So DDN starting to attract some talent over on the data management side.
Yeah, definitely. That was a good move for DataDirect. I mean, yeah, Pascal's been he's been around, and he's a well-known name. Like you said, he was at Bull, and I think before that he was at SGI, and looks like he settled at DDN, I think, is the VP there for the EMEA unit.
Yeah, it's not only at the top. I know that DDN's been hiring throughout the all of their ranks as well. I think they're really bolstering the HPC-oriented team over there, and it's interesting to see how that's developing.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the companies, especially the companies that are doing well, are hiring, especially in the storage area. I mean, you've noted that the storage area is growing faster than some of the other areas on the hardware side, and it seems like whenever I talk to a storage company, they are hiring people on for that.
Well, that's sounds good, Michael. And we've got the busy fall season ahead, so I think we'll be seeing how a lot of these things play out.
Yep, post-Labor Day, I think the news is going to heat up, and we're heading into the conference season.
All right, well, have a good long weekend, Michael.
You too.
Bye-bye.
That's a wrap.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by APRO International Incorporated, leading developers of innovative supercomputing solutions uniquely positioned to support high-performance computing markets. www.apro.com.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.